Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and today we're going to be looking into daily fantasy sports, obviously in particular basketball. And to do that, I am joined by the one and only Gabriel Harbour. How are you going, mate?
Hey, how's it going, man? Great to be here.
It's good to have you on. Now, people who don't know who you are, where can they find your fantastic work?
Well, they can... I don't know where they can find my fantastic work. That doesn't exist. I appreciate the compliment, though. You can find my work at rotogrinders.com, though. I do the daily podcast Tuesday and Thursday as of right now. And then Monday through Friday at 4:30 Eastern, I'm on the Daily Fantasy Happy Hour, which is a show that sort of fuses together nonsense and daily fantasy baseball strategy. So that's where you can find me, rotogrinders.com.
Yeah, so head across there. And, of course, on Twitter, which most people would know you over there on, as Crazy Gaby on Twitter. And they can see your wonderful insight. And it's not often that I am joined on the podcast with someone with a better beard than myself. But I think you've got me pretty much covered in that area. That is it's a fantastic neck mane you've got going there.
Well, I have to say this: you may not have the same length that I do, but if I remember back to my younger days when my beard was around the same length as yours, you actually have a much nicer beard for the length that it's at right now than mine was. It took about a year before mine really started to fill in and look nice. You're solid all the way around right now. You don't even need a longer beard. You're fine.
Yeah, it grows in pretty well. There's no sparse areas on mine. It doesn't take much to fill in the gap. So that's one good thing. Even if I cut it back, it fills in fairly quickly. But I don't know that many people are tuning in to hear beard talk. Hey, some people maybe are. Maybe they want to know the secrets. And people always go, how do you grow your beard to it? I do nothing. I literally do nothing and it grows. It's just what it is. Can't change that.
Growing a beard is the easiest thing in the world to do, just FYI.
that is exactly spot on. Now, we're going to talk daily fantasy sports because, as we've seen over the last couple of seasons, the growth has been phenomenal in this industry. You know, we know about seasonal leagues, and that is still the bulk of what people play, but the growth in daily fantasy has been phenomenal, and it's going to continue to grow at probably an exponential rate over the next couple of years, and people looking for instant gratification, instant satisfaction, instant payoffs on what they're investing into the sport. Plus, it's also the ability to win money on a more regular basis, which draws people in. Do you find that with the growth of this industry that it attracts more casual fans, more people who may not have played fantasy before, or is it a crossover between the two styles?
You know, it is a crossover between the two styles, but I really appreciate the question. I think it's very interesting. And if I could kind of go off the beaten path from what's normally talked about in terms of this issue, I think that the industry has done a great job marketing itself the way that that poker marketed itself, and the way that other games of skill that also involve a degree of variance and you play for entry fees on a daily or nightly basis or whatever. I think they've done a great job there. The poker players, I think we can say that the migration has been successful. For me, when I look at this industry, I think that we could be doing a little bit of a better job, both personally on just a level of myself, but also on a macro level with sites like FanDuel and DraftKings, of sort of playing this up for the long run, so to speak, and really trying to capture casual players. Casual players, they might be lured in by the thrill of winning big money. You know, Peter in Denver, Colorado, won $1 million playing fantasy baseball. No, but it's hard to do is to kind of balance the cutthroat nature of playing daily fantasy sports for money every day with the fact that we are all a community. And I think that's where you find the lasting value with daily fantasy sports, is once the dust has settled and, you know, not everybody can be a huge winner, but everybody can kind of find their place and find friendships and have a good time to where they feel like they're part of a community. That's where I think that growth needs to happen, not in the pocketbooks, not with the advertising dollars, but with people really kind of focusing on the communal aspect and building this together so it kind of mimics season long. You know, that you got your buddies and your beer and your draft board and you've ordered some pizza. That's a good time. You don't care if you lose at that point. And I think we really need more of that in DFS.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, RotoGrinders has got a great community with the boards and all that sort of stuff over there. And that's the sort of thing that is growing. But I think something that people do need to understand with daily fantasy sports is there is that lure of, as you said, you know, DePito in Denver won $1 million, but it's not a get rich quick sort of system. It can be something that you can make money off, and people do, but it's fun, and the money is a slow build a lot of the time. Yeah, there might be some big wins, but there'll be some stretches of losses and all that sort of stuff. And it's not, I'm going to go out there, play it once, win 50 grand, and then I'm done. It's like, I might go out there once and win 50 bucks. And then I might win 50 bucks the next day. And then I might win 50. And then by the end of the year, maybe I've won whatever amount. But it's not like I'm going to play once every 6 months, and then that's going to be enough money to satisfy me. And that's something that people need to understand as well. It's very hard to go in there, play once, and just win a big amount of money. One other thing that, now talking to someone with you is such a huge gravitas in the industry, that to help grow this daily fantasy segment, is they need to open it up to international users. We can't play it here in Australia. No, obviously there's still states in the US that can't play it, but there is an international market for, especially for games like baseball, which has a big following overseas, basketball as well. In particular, we know that the basketball is massive across plenty of countries, Australia, China, that's probably a hard one to get into, but all through Europe and as well, there's lots of opportunity. I know that people here are crying out for the opportunity to be able to play daily fantasy sports, and it's something that, if it happens, that would create another big boost in the industry as well. Obviously, there's legalities associated with it, but it's something that I hope is able to be done so that we can play it freely from down here. Now,
I was going to say, if I could chime in real quick, as far as the international is concerned, DraftKings getting its UK gaming license recently was huge. Okay. Hopefully that is a shadow of things to come. I agree with you, especially sports like soccer, basketball that really have that international feel to them. It would be great if I was, you know, just like back in the days of poker or any other game I play online, if I could be playing against people around the globe. And Australia, of course, you know, really starting to I don't want to say be assimilated, because of course you have a great basketball heritage there, but really starting to kind of partner up with United States basketball. You know, Andrew Bogut's been here for a long time. Joe Ingles, Dante Exum, rest in peace, Exum's knee, by the way. Hopefully that gets better, and I can't wait to see him in 2016. And then of course you got the Starters, one of my personal favorite shows, you know, representing Australia. So I absolutely would love to see DFS take hold overseas.
Yeah, and big shout out to Lee Ellis as well from the Starters, who I had a few chats with when I was over in Vegas at Summer League. He's a great guy, and you're right, he's repping Australian basketball journalism or media personalities and media presence extremely well. But it'd be massive if we could get that over. Now, I didn't know about DraftKings getting the UK license. I had spoken to one of the guys at DraftKings about 6 months ago, imploring them, like, try and do something internationally. He said, yeah, we're looking at it. Obviously, they were looking at it, and something has come to fruition. So that is a positive step. Now, do you play daily fantasy every day, 7 days a week?
I used to play 7 days a week when I was, quote unquote, making it in the industry, you know, trying to find my place to the point where I could get a full-time job in this industry. Now I've scaled it back. I play 5 days a week, and I would actually caution and recommend all players take a couple of days off. It's great when you're winning every day. Well, hell yeah, anything's great when you're winning every day. When you start to lose, and you will go on losing streaks, it doesn't matter if you're the Michael Jordan or the Sam Bowie of the daily fantasy sports world, you will go on losing streaks. Sometimes they can last 2, 3, 4 weeks. And if you're playing 7 days a week, that mental drain can really wear on you. Just take a couple of days. And I think it's important to set aside those days beforehand as well, because if you try to just say, oh, well, I'm going to play until I don't feel like playing anymore, days will begin to run into weeks. Weeks will begin to run into months, and you will not stop playing. So like, say I have something else I can do this day. It's going to be beautiful weather. I'm going to go out and hike, or I'm going to go play some racquetball with my buddies or whatever. Set that time aside. Don't burn yourself out.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it's a natural sort of human instinct, is if you are losing, you want to go, I'm going to get back out there. And we're going to talk about this a little bit later in terms of bankroll management, but I need to go back out there. I need to win. I need to recoup what I did. And then, it happened again. And then it puts a real negative spin on what you're doing, and you can lose the enjoyment, you can lose your focus, you can lose what you're doing, and then you can, not only ruin your enjoyment of the game, but you can ruin other parts of your life as well if you're not focused on what you're doing. And that break is like anyone. It's like NBA players, they need to have a day off for rest, or the coach will cancel practice because the players aren't focused or fresh. You just need that time to go, okay, I'm away from this for a day. Let's get the focus back and get back into it. When you look at playing, and you go to set your lineups, what sort of time frame do you put into it? Now, you obviously do this as a full-time sort of gig, but how much time do you put into setting your own lineups?
Setting my own lineups, I guess you could look at this one of two ways. Does the researching beforehand, does that count? Or are we just talking about building lineups? Because if the research is going into it, it probably takes me about 2 to 3 hours total to do all the work analyzing the salary cap and then actually, you know, clicking a bunch and entering the lineups. Right now, the strategy I'm using is I put in about 50 unique lineups per night with all my favorite players kind of sorted and like almost like a Venn diagram. Every single player is touching every single other player. So hopefully if they all go off, it's a big night for me. There are various strategies in DFS. Of course, that's one of them. We could talk about that later. Yeah. But to do that, to enter 50 lineups specifically, takes me about a half an hour to 40 minutes. I did it before the show, actually, at about 6 o'clock Eastern. And, you know, I think it's one of those things that only do what you're comfortable with. If you would ask me to enter 50 lineups in a half an hour's time 2 years ago, I would have looked at you like you were crazy. Entering 5 lineups in 30 minutes was tough enough. And so it's really just about pacing yourself and making sure that you're doing what you've – just like, you know, again, to go back to poker, don't play more tables online than you feel comfortable with. A lot of people got into a lot of trouble when they tried to play more tables than they felt like they could handle at a time.
It's about setting up your own systems as well. And once you get comfortable with the way that you're running the system, you can always ramp up what you're able to do when you look at it. Okay, I know that this is the process and this is how it's going to work. And you're not overloading yourself initially. And that's really key. But the research is a big part of it. There's a lot that goes into it. And you detail a lot of that when you do your podcasts on Roto Grinders and do your radio appearances and that sort of stuff. Like you do the research for your own benefit, but also for everyone else's benefit as well. But everyone can always do their own research. And I'm sure you encourage people to do their own research and work and, you know, rankings and projections and all that sort of stuff in terms of looking at what they're doing, because it is able to be done, but sometimes it just takes a little bit of time to get your head around everything that goes into it. Now, in terms of the sites for daily fantasy, we know the biggest one is FanDuel. DraftKings is not too far behind, and they're the two main players. What do you do in terms of looking at the sites? Do you spread your lineups around different sites? Do you favor a certain site? How do these sites differ? Which ones do you look at using, and how do you use that sort of thing to your advantage?
So I think with daily fantasy currently going on right now, you can definitely vary the site that you play at. And for football as well, you can vary. Since this is basketball specific and a lot of your listeners are going to be looking for basketball advice, my advice is, unless you have like the hour before lineups lock to set aside, you won't be bothered whatsoever, and you have an intimate understanding of both salary caps, only play one side for basketball. The reason being, there is so much news that breaks so late, and if you don't have a very clear, concise plan for switching from one lineup to another or one player to another and kind of understanding how each moving part, it's like a lot like chess, you know? Somebody captures your bishop, you need to know how that affects every other piece on the board. You're not just, you know, trying to figure out how that affects, you know, one piece or one section of the board. That affects the entire game. And it's kind of like, you know, when Kevin Durant goes out at the last minute, you know, with a sore foot or something, and all of a sudden Russell Westbrook is the best play of the night. You need to know what that means for your entire lineup when you have to bump up, you know, let's say Kyrie Irving and pay for the significantly more expensive Russell Westbrook, and then the trickle down effect for the rest of your lineup. And when there's 10 minutes before lineups lock, and you have a significant amount of money, whatever that happens to be for you and your bankroll, in play, I mean, it can be just about the most stressful thing in the world, and you're prone to make a lot of mistakes. So my advice with basketball, stick to one site. Other sports, you can definitely branch out because they're a lot slower paced. And just to give you a couple shout outs to a few other sites. Yep. My buddy Mark Herberholz owns a site called OwnThePlay.com. He's a brand new site coming up, should have a lot of cool stuff this fall for basketball and football. And then fantasyaces.com, another site besides FanDuel and DraftKings. I actually do my happy hour each day at RotoGrinders, sponsored by them. They're very cool, very forward-thinking, always looking for new and innovative game types to offer to people.
Well, get your buddies at those sites to open it up to Australia. Then I can come in and get you. You can take my money that way.
I can tell you right now, OwnThePlay.com, definitely looking into the international market very hard. I've had some conversations with the ownership there, and they understand that the future is opening DFS up to international play.
Yep, that'd be massive. Now, the major difference, that aside from salary caps, as you mentioned, probably between the two big sites like FanDuel and DraftKings, is the times when lineups lock. Now, do you have a preference with FanDuel where it locks at the start or with DraftKings where you can do late swaps? What's your preference?
For me, working in this industry, sleep and breathe daily fantasy from the time I wake up in the morning. So for me, when 7 o'clock Eastern time hits and it's time for me to clock out for the day, go spend time with my family, I don't want to worry about anything anymore. So FanDuel works out perfect for me. I could just lock it in and forget about it. If somebody gets scratched, well, everybody else is just as screwed as I am. And I'm not too worried about it. We'll just, you know, chalk it up to a losing night and we'll move forward. For somebody who likes to watch the games as they happen, I tend to lean on like the NBA Game Time app and the condensed versions of games. Yep. I watch a lot of those throughout the course of the season. Don't so much watch basketball live as much as I do watch the games the next day. For someone who's watching games live, though, sweating the lineups is a big part of it for you. I think DraftKings is excellent because if you're right on top of it, you can gain a massive advantage from having a late slot plan. And that's important. It goes back to the having a plan. Because when that news breaks, you can know exactly who you want to swap to. But if you got 5 minutes and 10 different lineups that you got to change, you need to know what you're doing, not just who you want to play. You know, how does it affect every other position? So DraftKings is great. FanDuel is great. It really matters what your situation in life is. And I think it's cool that we have options like that where we can, you know, we can play on a site that really caters to our place in life and where we're at right now.
Yeah, exactly. It obviously does depend what you're doing. And even if you normally play DraftKings, but you have to go out that night, like, oh, I've got to go to a wedding or whatever it is, and you can't make those late changes, well, maybe move your lineups onto FanDuel for that night and shift it around, because it does definitely impact. And like, I'm with you. I watch a lot of basically all the games as condensed games, because over here with the time zone, the games are on in the middle of my day when I'm at my other less exciting job. So I have to come home and watch those as condensed games. And also, look, in that situation, if I was doing it in terms of, you know, late swaps, I might not get them in because I can't focus in on it because I'm doing other things at another job.
Right.
So there's always different things. And it same goes for people in the States who might work night shift or whatever and can't be on top of it for those 3 hours, you know, between 7 Eastern and 10 Eastern, between the East and West Coast games. It definitely makes a big difference. And there's always there's the scoring differences as well in terms of how they put the points up, you know, differences in efficiency stats and turnovers and three-pointers and all those sort of things that differ through all the sites. But as with any fantasy league, whether it's daily fantasy, whether it's seasonal fantasy league, you have to know the settings and you have to understand the settings and be able to exploit the settings. And that's really key. You can to a degree, but you can't go in and use the exact same strategy at all sites if the scoring system differs, because someone who's great value on one site might be mediocre value at another site just based on what they're going to do. And that's always a key thing as well. Now, recently we had Yahoo entering the daily fantasy arena. What do you think about what Yahoo's offering? I haven't had a chance, or I haven't looked at it, obviously, because we can't actually access it and it's only new. What do you think of what they're doing with the daily fantasy stuff?
It's very interesting the way they've chosen to get into the industry, because common sense would tell us that they would be a very polished product, having as much capital and as many resources behind their development team as they do. But it was kind of the opposite. It's a very unrefined, very rough around the edges product. And I actually kind of like it. I think that putting your beta out there, so to speak, I don't think they technically call it a beta, but putting more or less a beta product out there for people to test. You find out the bugs. Listen, the middle of the baseball season, for as much as I love baseball and I want you guys to play, let's face it, this is the dead season when it comes to DFS. So they're doing a really smart thing by allowing users to, I think, test the site while they continue to build it up and make it look good. And I'm guessing it's all with the intention of having it, you know, running optimally on all levels by the time football comes around, and then also basketball. Both of those sports definitely bigger than daily fantasy baseball. So I'm going to kind of reserve judgment and say that I think this fall and this winter are going to be very telling for how serious Yahoo is taking daily fantasy sports. If they don't improve their site, improve their user experience by a good deal over the course of this upcoming football and basketball season, I'll probably lean towards their offering not being quite on par with FanDuel and DraftKings. But I kind of think that that's what they're doing. They're kind of playing for the long game, and they're letting users sort of cycle through everything and see what works and what doesn't work.
Do you think that ESPN is looking at this and deciding whether they're going to enter it, or are they almost a definite to enter, and we just don't know when that's happening? Because we can see on their website, their articles, that they're talking about DFS a lot more, whereas in the past they wouldn't really mention it at all. But now it's actually something they're bringing up with specific articles, specific points, and daily plays of the day, all that sort of stuff. Are they looking at bringing out their own platform?
That's a tough one. I would think ESPN would want a piece of the pie, especially if they see. I think how Yahoo fares, if they haven't already decided to get into the game, which, to be honest, they probably have decided one way or the other already. We're pretty late in the game for somebody to be on the fence. But you would think they'd want a piece of the pie, but it might be nice to sit back and kind of be what RotoGrinders is, you know, kind of take in the affiliate money. They've obviously got massive advertising deals in place with DraftKings, and they can create content out the wazoo. I got a buddy, Joe Kaiser, who actually works for ESPN, writes up some of their daily fantasy content. And I know Cynthia Freeland over there, you know, she provides a lot of the on-air daily fantasy commentary. It's great for the industry to have somebody on SportsCenter talking about DFS. So, you know, I think it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if, you know, they stayed in the content game. But, you know, who knows? They could be building something right now. Everybody on their development team signs an NDA and nothing leaks out. Nobody knows anything about it. It's really tough to tell. I'll say this. I think that any site that is underestimating just how much of a stranglehold FanDuel and DraftKings has on this industry will be in for a rude awakening. I think that these media, you know, behemoths that come in like Yahoo and ESPN and think that they can just dominate from day one based on name brand value alone, I think they have another thing coming. The time to jump in and challenge FanDuel and DraftKings on even footing was 2, 3, 4 years ago, and they're going to definitely have an uphill battle, which is maybe something those sites aren't used to having. Maybe that's a reason ESPN chooses to stay out of it. You know, ESPN usually has the high ground when it comes to offering content of any kind. And maybe they see this as sort of a losing endeavor because they're so far behind the eight ball already. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where this goes in the upcoming year.
Well, you can see when you talk about the foothold that the FanDuel and DraftKings have got, you watch an NBA game and you just see ads for these all over the place.
Like, everywhere.
It's just on the court. Individual teams are sponsored by these. It's happening in the NFL as well. They're all over the place. They are just dominating advertising. There's money everywhere for them. They're raking in money. They're putting money out. They're promoting themselves all over the place. So they've got a massive stranglehold on what they're doing. And you're right. Maybe ESPN does stay out and just goes hard at providing content and providing advice and info and affiliate money and ad money and all that sort of stuff rather than doing it themselves.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. Now we talk about all these daily fantasy stuff, but let's get into talking about the games and what actual contests that get offered. And we hear that the terms, you know, bandied about, you know, tournaments and cash games, double ups, 50-50s, all that sort of stuff. Let's just go through some basics here for people who may not be up with it and talk about the different types of games and the way that we can differ our strategies. Okay. So when we look at tournaments, when we say tournament, what do we mean by a tournament?
So tournament is any contest that pays less than 33% of the entrance, as far as I'm concerned. It's a loose definition, the difference between a cash game and a tournament. But I'm going to go strictly, you know, a cash game will pay more than 33% or more of the field, and a tournament will pay less than 33%. So, again, that's a very loose definition, but most of the big, you know, tournaments with thousands of people in them, you're going to typically see payouts ranging anywhere from 20 to 30% of the entrants getting paid money back.
So, and you see with the tournaments, it's very much the bigger payouts at the top where you see more cash games.
Yeah,
it's
staggered
more, it's,
for sure.
It's more spread where you get the same amount of money for the top 50% or 48% or whatever it is of the field. And that's the difference. But the difference in terms of the two, it has an impact on the way that you should look at setting your lineup on the research that you do, because to get money in a tournament and to get big money, you need to be right at the pinnacle of the guys there. Whereas in a cash game, you've just got to be better than half of the people in there. So talk about how that differs in terms of how you look to set your lineup with the differences in the way they pay out.
So in a cash game, you're really looking for the safest play possible. And in basketball, more than football and baseball, there's generally going to be very obvious plays. Sometimes there can be 5, 6, 7 of them. And a lot of the times when you're playing against somebody, it'll come down to those last 3, 4 players that are really battling it out to determine who's going to win the contest. You know, basketball is all about minutes and opportunity, understanding how offenses work, understanding who coaches go to, what kind of systems they run, and how likely they are to give, you know, player X number of minutes. And so in basketball, more than the other two sports, the other two major sports, baseball and football, you don't want to go contrarian as much. And contrarian's a word we throw around a lot in the industry. Really all it means is to kind of go against the public. So if 25% of the lineups in a tournament were going to have, let's say, Russell Westbrook, then maybe if, you know, Kyrie Irving was only going to be in 5% of lineups, but you thought he had a reasonable chance of matching the score that Russell Westbrook would have, Kyrie Irving would then become the contrarian play and maybe a great idea to use him in a tournament because, you know, in a vacuum, Kyrie Irving may not score as many fantasy points as Russell Westbrook on average. But if they both have that same range of expected outcomes where Kyrie Irving could score just as many, if not more, than Russell Westbrook, and that happens, Kyrie Irving outscores Russell Westbrook, you will be one of the 5% of people in a tournament to have Kyrie Irving, whereas everybody else, you know, will be stuck with Russell Westbrook in their lineup, and you'll kind of be winning that position. So that's kind of what makes basketball more interesting than other sports is baseball, one swing of a bat, so like kind of anybody is a contrarian play. And in football, of course, touchdowns are so random, they're impossible to predict. So pretty much everybody's in play for tournaments. But in basketball, you still have to stick within that that paradigm of upside is minutes and opportunity. And that's really all it is. You can't hope to roster a guy getting 15 minutes and think that he's ever going to outscore somebody like Russell Westbrook or LeBron James or Anthony Davis. So that's really the wiggle. You have a little less wiggle room in daily fantasy basketball than you do in other sports, but you can certainly still find contrarian plays to help you win tournaments. And then for cash games, it's basically the exact opposite. If Russell Westbrook is the best play, then he's the best play. Just roster him. Don't try to outsmart people in the places where the play is obvious.
Yeah. Now, we saw Russell Westbrook last season was his salaries were going to some. Have you ever seen salaries as high as what they were for him last year? Like, they were over $12,500 at stages on FanDuel. They were just and they were that high, and he was still valuable. Exactly. Because he was going 60, 70 points every night, and the salaries just kept getting bigger and bigger. Yep. And you think there's got to be a point where you can stop using it, but it just didn't really happen. He just kept putting it up, and then eventually he tailed off a bit, and the salary came down, but the numbers were huge. But that's right. You have to look at that, because if everyone's using Westbrook and then you don't, you've got a smaller chance of being right. But yeah. And that's great in a tournament because you don't need to win as often in a tournament to actually make money. With a cash game, you need to win a little less than 2/3 of the time to really bring home money. In a tournament, you're never going to win 2/3 of the tournaments that you enter. So you can afford to take a little bit more risk on it.
As I say, and just to as like a point of reference, when he was in the middle of that run last year, when his salary was sky high, you wanted to take him in the majority of your lineups, but playing a couple non-Russell Westbrook lineups was great. There was one night in particular against the Timberwolves who, for all intents and purposes, should have been a cakewalk. You know, that should have been an easy 80 fantasy points for him, considering what he was doing and how bad their defense was. He laid a little bit of a stinker. I think he barely scraped 40 fantasy points, which for his price tag was terrible. And the people who won the tournaments that night were the ones who took the point guards not named Russell Westbrook and then used the extra money somewhere else. So, just kind of piggybacking on what you said, you don't need to win all the time, but you just want to give yourself a reasonable opportunity to, have that player who's not very highly owned, because when the high-owned player doesn't perform as expected, your lineup can shoot up the rankings just by virtue of you not rostering Russell Westbrook in this case.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So he was in that stretch. Say it was 10 games and you said, okay, I'm going to go against him every time. And he was great in 9 of them, but in 1 of them he sucked and the guy that you put went big, and that means you won a tournament. Well, you just offset all your losses on those other 9 days. But,
easily.
But in cash games, it's the other way around. Like, you may have lost 9 times and won 1, and that's still that's a big downer. So that's the big difference between how to approach it. Now, we talked about, if you're spending $12,000 on Westbrook and he gets 40 points, that's no good. Now, what's the benchmark? How do you look at it when you go, I want this many points for this many dollars?
So I'm looking at 5 fantasy points per $1,000 spent on FanDuel, I believe. I'm a little rusty on that, but I believe you get $60,000.
60,000. Yeah, that's the way I would normally look at it. So you want 300 points for $60,000.
Yeah, 300 fantasy points, unless it's a night where, let's say that lineups have, salary pool, the salary cap, the pool of players have already been released. And all of a sudden, Joakim Noah and Pau Gasol are out and you know, a couple other high name players are out, and everybody's going to have Taj Gibson and Nikola Mirotic. You're going to put up a ton of fantasy points. Then you might need to aim a little bit higher because the scores on average are going to be a lot higher. But generally speaking, 300 fantasy points is going to put you in contention for all of your cash games, your head-to-head matches, your 50-50s. And then for tournaments, there really is no point per dollar. The winning score for a tournament might be 380 one night, and it might be 330 the next night. It really depends on which players go off, and there's really no way to predict that.
Yeah, exactly right. I always look at it that way, 300 for a cash game, and the other ones, you're just trying to get as big a ceiling as you possibly can,
yep,
taking some risk on guys. And it's always, as we talked before, you're doing the research before, and you that scramble before setting up, because you want to see who's out, who's a late scratch, who's going to go from getting 10 minutes to getting 30 minutes, and that opportunity is going to be there. And we saw that it's, you know, early on in the season, say in a night where Enes Kanter might have sat or Derek Favors might have sat, well, you know, Rudy Gobert is going to get in the starting lineup. He's going to play 30 minutes and then his numbers are going to go huge. Whereas before he'd play 18 minutes, and it would happen with a ton of different guys. And Mirotić is probably the best example, because you could got him at bargain basement salary prices. And then when he goes in and he puts up big money, and then when you know that he's back to the bench, then you don't waste that $3,000 or $3,400 or whatever it was on him, because he's going to play 15 minutes and there's no point to it.
I'm so excited for Nikola Mirotić, by the way. You want to hear my bold call for the upcoming season?
Yeah, please.
Nikola Mirotić on the All-Star team.
Wow, okay. I've been going – this is something – I reckon the last five podcasts I've done is I reckon I've had a discussion about the Bulls and their rotation in every podcast, and I want to get your thoughts on it. Yeah. This is off Daily Fantasy a little bit. I don't know how the minutes play out in the front court. I'm trying to work out how they distribute the minutes, and I can't work out the exact, because Mirotić deserves 30 minutes. Pau Gasol deserves 30 minutes. Well, you can make a case that Joakim Noah should get 27 to 30 minutes. Taj Gibson's a guy who's on, if he's on another team, gets 25 to 30 minutes a night. And Bobby Portis went out and just destroyed everyone in summer league, and he's going to get 0 minutes in Chicago. How do you think it works out?
I think it's crazy. I think, in an offense ran by Hoiberg now, as opposed to Tom Thibodeau. I mean, I think we can all agree, right? The Mirotić at the three was just a disaster last
terrible
season.
Yep.
That was terrible. I advocated for it early in the year. I was one of the people in the, I guess you could call me part of the media, who was pushing. Points to be, you know, kind of like a Paul Pierce deal, you know, Tom Thibodeau to run Mirotić at the three. And then I think that's probably the most realistic way of getting Mirotić close to 30 minutes a game, is maybe give him 8 to 10 minutes at the three and then allow him to play 20 minutes or so at the four or the five. And I think that's what makes him special, though, is he's so versatile. And if you look at the rest of their front court, though, he really does the one thing that the other guys can't do, which is stretch the floor. And the Bulls offense with him on the floor, just phenomenal. I think that he's one of the better players in the NBA that doesn't get the respect he should get. And I think that their absolute best chance of being the best team they can be is by playing him at least 30 minutes a game. So I'm the biggest Mirotić fan you will ever find. And I'm calling it. If he can get around 30 minutes a game, I'm saying the All-Star game might not be too far off.
That's a very, very bold call, but I do like it. Now, initially when I was looking at it, I was going, okay, Gasol's going to get 30. Noah might get 24. Maybe Mirotić gets 25. But the more I look at it each day that passes, I go, you know what? Mirotić is going to get more. Noah's going to be minimized. Gibson has to be completely minimized, I think, in this offense. I think he's going to drop down to 15 minutes a night, Gibson, unless they trade him, which I really hope that they do. I think that Gasol and Mirotić are going to get the bulk of the minutes, and it's trending that way in my mind. Now, things are always – we're in August, and I've got nothing else to think about apart from Bulls rotations. But the more I look at it, and maybe it's just me overthinking, I just think, well, maybe Joakim Noah's going to get 19 minutes a game. Maybe he's going to get 20 minutes a game. I don't know how it's going to work out. I'm so confused by it, but yeah, I love watching Mirotić out there. It's fantastic seeing him out there. You think they might
trade Joakim Noah at some point?
No, I don't think they would, just because of his standing within the team, his character with the team, his leadership skills with the team. He for all intents and purposes is the leader of this team. Like Derek Rose is not a vocal guy. Joakim Noah is the guy who pumps everyone up and gets in their faces, which he can still do at 20 minutes a night. It's probably not going to suit him the best, especially when he's heading into free agency. But I don't think they'd want to trade him from a chemistry standpoint. Taj Gibson, on the other hand, been a great six man, big man off the bench, but he can go. He can go and free up those minutes and get some wing help. That's what I'd enjoy.
Same here. I think we're driving in the Honda Accord together here on this one. Same Accord.
Let's talk bankroll management, because that is a key point, especially for people jumping into the industry and thinking, you know, this is going to be the season that I really, really get into daily fantasy. I'm going to study. I'm going to put some money aside. I'm going to make myself some money. Some people do this as a full-time job, not necessarily media-wise, but they play daily fantasy as a full-time job. A lot of people would love to have that as their job. I go out there and play daily fantasy as my job to make money. But bankroll management is super important, because if you don't have a set plan and know what you're doing with it, you could be out of money in a month, 2 months.
Yeah.
What's your...
Oh, quicker than that.
Yeah, that's
very generous in how quickly you can be out of money.
Or maybe you get a few wins early on and that stretches it out. But you could be done really quickly unless you plan it properly. Now, the number that I normally look at when I talk bankroll management is that on any given day, you want to look at roughly 10% of your overall bankroll to lay out. How do you approach it in terms of bankroll management? What sort of tips can you give to people about you know, spending their money?
Before you even decide what kind of bankroll strategy you want to follow, you need to identify what type of player you are. Are you a casual player, or are you kind of, you know, going into this with the intent purpose of making money? And that might sound like a strange question to pose to yourself, because you're thinking like, well, of course, like, yeah, you idiot, I'm putting money down. Of course, I'm trying to win money. But what I really mean is, are you putting a set amount of money? You don't have any other disposable income that you could just, you know, toss the credit card up there, use the PayPal account and buy in on any night? Or are you somebody who's just going to play a couple nights a week and you are perfectly comfortable buying in for $50, $25 or whatever here or there on the nights when you can actually play? And that's important, because it really frames the rest of your play from night to night. If you take $1,000 to start, you say, okay, I got, you know, my tax return came, I'm putting $1,000 in my daily fantasy bankroll, and I'm not adding to it or taking away from it for the next 6 months. I'm just going to play every night or however many days per week, and I'm going to see where we're at. That's really where bankroll management is important. And I think that is a very important distinction to make, because trying to preach bankroll management to a person who's just playing casually will generally go over their head, because they're just, you know, they're wanting to play when they can have fun. But if you are that person who's putting a set amount of money in, you say, I don't want to add anything to it, I don't want to take away, I want to see what I can do, the 10% mark is sort of the gold standard. Now, there are reasons to play less. There are reasons to play more. On a night with less games, that means the percentages of players are going to be artificially inflated, because there's just not that many players to choose from. And that means that if you decide not to play a player who is 30 or 40% owned, he goes off and has an amazing night, well, you've pretty much locked yourself out of making any money. So for that reason, the smaller slates, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 games, I'll generally cut my play in half and maybe go around 5% of my total bankroll. Let's say we have a night with huge tournaments, and I just so happen to love, love, love the spot that 2 or 3 players happen to be in, and I think that maybe I have an advantage over the rest of the players because I'm tuned into the NBA and I know what's going on. Then I'll take maybe 12, 13% of my bankroll, and I'll still diversify it across a good number of contests, but I'm willing to just stretch a little bit further. Now, I'm never going to put like 20, 25% of my bankroll in play. Anybody can break an ankle. Anybody can have a bad night. And you don't want to open yourself up. You don't want to open your chin up to getting just socked in the jaw. But I think that there is some wiggle room. My default amount every night actually is 7.5%. I put 7.5% of my bankroll in play. And I'm sure the next question you were going to ask, so I'll just answer it here. Generally, the way I like to break it down is about 80% of that money that I put into play on a given night. So let's say I have $1,000. I put 7.5% of it in play. I've got $75 in play. About 80% of that money is going to go into cash games, head-to-heads, double-ups, triple-ups. And then about 20% of it is going to go into tournaments. And that, to me, is a really healthy balance of taking shots while also making sure your consistent money comes in.
Yeah, that was the next question I was going to ask. And that's important as well, that you need to know where to put that money. It's no point, I don't think, putting in a chunk of your bankroll and putting it all into tournaments, because you need to make sure, okay, my tournament doesn't hit, but I've still made a little bit. I haven't lost money because my cash games have hit, because I've finished in the 40th percentile. I'm going to win in all my cash games, and I'm going to lose in a tournament. So it's not a complete loss. You haven't got a big win, but you've just you're just sort of keeping afloat. I know that probably doesn't sound like the right term, but you're just treading water, and then maybe a big win comes in. But if you're missing the big wins and then you're going backwards every time, that's the problem. And you can slowly, and cash games are about a slow burn. It's a slow accumulation of money. And then you're building yourself up for that one that might come every 3 weeks or every 6 weeks or every 2 months when you get a big tournament win. And that just adds on, but you've just been slowly accumulating, one day up, one day down, 2 days up, and you're gradually growing it. And that's important as well, to get that split right. Because you need to make sure that your money's in the right spot. Because as fun as it is, if you've got no money, then you're not playing anymore. And then that's less fun. I think that's probably the best way of putting that.
Yeah, and if I could add one more thing on to that, you can definitely be a tournament-only player. I have a great number of colleagues and peers in the daily fantasy industry who are tournament-only players. It's just important that basically what we talked about for bankroll management, you completely throw that out the window. And I actually had a chance to interview last year one of the best tournament players in the game. He says he plays no more than 2% of his total bankroll in tournaments on a given night. So if we use that same $1,000 starting amount, that means he is playing $20 in tournaments every night. And you might think to yourself, like, I have $1,000 in my bankroll. Why am I only playing $20? But that variance is so high, you can go months without a big win, and then you might win two tournaments in the same week. So you really never know when the big win's going to hit. And eventually, over time, winning at cash games and winning at tournaments, they're going to even out. But winning at tournaments is just like a roller coaster ride. It's going to be fun. You got to be in for the long haul. And no more than 2% of your bankroll per night if that's the route you choose to go.
That's a very interesting way of looking at it as well. Because you're not going to win it as often. If you do win it as often, then you're a genius. But you're just not going to win it as often. We had a question come in from Ian Zimmerman on Twitter, who's on Twitter at Marla3. And he says, are there any universal stats that you look at, say a player on the road with back-to-backs, who you think will produce less amount of fantasy points than a rested one? So do you look at that when you're doing your research? This guy is on the road. This guy is on a second half of a back-to-back. He's on 4 games in 5 nights. Do you look at that and go, he is due a decrease, or is there team-specific matchups you look at? I know that you look at team-specific matchups, but how does that impact what you're doing?
Well, Ian, thank you for the question, by the way. That's a great one. I would say universal, no, mainly because it's always going to be specific. I might not like a player on the road for the Pelicans because those Pelican scorekeepers, those guys really like to pump up the stats, Cam Davis and Tyreke Evans and the like. So
all those assist numbers.
It's a guy takes 9 dribbles and somebody still gets the assist for it. But I digress. It's more specific than it is universal. And really, it's just all about being plugged into the league. That's why I love the NBA more than any other sport. I mean, I like football. I like baseball. NBA is almost like an ongoing soap opera. I mean, there's just, there's such big personalities and so many little nuances, and the officiating in the game is so gray area. It's not a lot of black and white. Was it a foul? Was it not a foul? Was that an assist? Was that a block? It's so much fun. And so I would say no universal stats, but like generally guys that are on 3 games in 4 nights or the dreaded 4 games in 5 nights, which thankfully Adam Silver and the league office have pretty much done away with this season. Yep. I think that teams are averaging less than one of those per year this year. So I look at those more, and really like veterans and how coaches like to handle those veterans. Like, Greg Popovich, you can bet your bottom dollar that those starters for Greg Popovich, if they have a 3-game and 4-night stretch, well, they might just sit out one of those games, first of all. And if they don't, nobody is playing more than like 28 minutes on average with those 3 games combined. So it's time to be very cautious. On the flip side, if you see a team that's really rested, they haven't played in 3 nights and they don't have another game for 2 days afterwards, that Greg Popovich probably is going to have no problem running Kawhi Leonard out there for 32 minutes, and you can maybe target him with a little more security. So it's all situational. And with NBA, it's less about statistics and more about being plugged into the league and understanding what's going on. That's why I love it, by the way. It's just, it's all about being plugged in.
Yeah. And I don't know if you find this, but if you ever have a day where you're sort of disconnected from a bit, you're doing something, I used this example before, you're at a wedding, and then you come back the next day and you go, what the hell happened? What is going on? Who are these 5 new coaches in the league? And now there's a new team that's popped up. Everything changes in a day, and you go, what? I can't, I can't keep up. You have to be so plugged into it to actually really get a handle on it, because so much happens and then random things happen. It's just, it's all over the place. One last question before we let you go and spend some time with your family. The NBA schedule, they've smoothed it out a little bit in terms of, you know, those Thursday nights when you'd have one or two games on. We're getting, you know, four or five games on some of those nights, five or six. Do you have a preference for that? Like, I know that I would prefer that I had just have seven or eight games every single night rather than 13 and then two. How does it work for daily fantasy, and how do you prefer it?
So, if you remember a little bit earlier in the podcast, I said when it's like two, three, four, five games, I'll tend to cut my play back a little bit just because the ownership levels for players go so freaking high that it's easy to get locked out of the money and not make any money. Well, on the flip side of that, when we have like a 15-game or a 14-game night or whatever, 13 games, it becomes a lot more random as well just because there are so many good options. I might like seven different point guards, but unfortunately, I'm never going to be able to get as much exposure. And by the way, exposure means just as many, if you think about it in terms of like stock trading, as many shares of those players across all my lineups as possible, because I just don't have that much money to play on a given night. So it becomes a little more random when you make a larger slate too. I found personally between 7 and 9 games is kind of like the sweet spot. There's enough information available where I feel like I can get a decided edge over the competition, but there's not so much information available that, you know, randomness really starts to creep in. And I might like 7 point guards, only play 3 of them, and 3 of the 4 that I weren't able to play end up being the ones that go off. I liked them, sure. I just wasn't able to play them. So 7 to 9 games, perfect. And I would say that anything over 5 games, you're pretty much running the same strategy out there. Under 5 games, again, you're wanting to cut back on the amount of money you're spending a little bit. And you definitely don't want to fade the chalk play, the top play. Like a 5-game slate, I am never fading Russell Westbrook last season. It's just not happening because he's going to be like 95% owned, right, and the chances are he goes off. And so it's just not worth it.
That's all very, very accurate. And I concur with pretty much all of those thoughts, or basically all of those thoughts. There's a lot to learn about daily fantasy if you haven't been involved in it before, but you're looking to get into it. But I would highly recommend that you do, because there's a lot of fun to be had. There's money to be won, but mainly it's fun. It's fun. As you said, there's the community aspect of it as well that is growing too. There's fun, and it's something you don't have to be exclusively a daily fantasy player. You can mix it in with your seasonal leagues and all that sort of stuff. And there is always some crossover with that. Hey, look, this is the hot guy for daily fantasy. Maybe I'll go and run to the waiver wire and add him in my seasonal league as well for a week. And there is definite crossover in that sort of sense as well. So just, have a go at it. See how you like it. And you can tweet me about it. You can tweet at Crazy Gaby as well for any information, and have a listen to the podcast that he does, and check out the stuff that's over on Roto Grinders as well, because there's a lot of fantastic information over on Roto Grinders. If you haven't checked out that website, there's a lot happening over there. A lot of sort of how-to explanation articles, there's forums, and the podcast that you do and the guys over there at Roto Grinders is really, really interesting to listen to get yourselves ready to set lineups in whatever sport that you're looking to play. So I do highly recommend that as well. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show today.
Oh, well, thank you, buddy. It's been great, and we're going to have to get you maybe on the Roto Grinders podcast at some point. Love to talk with you, and sounds like your listeners might be interested in hearing you on some other platforms as well.
That would be fantastic. I would definitely enjoy that. I'm always up for heading onto some other shows, so I would love to do that at some point. Now, everybody, I just mentioned you can follow Gaby on Twitter at Crazy Gaby, and that's crazy, and then G-A-B-E-Y. So follow him and his legions of followers and fans over there for all your daily fantasy information and beard growing tips. And if you want less information on beard growing tips, hit up me, because I'm probably at about, I don't know, 90% less facial hair than he is, but still some interesting advice that we can both give you. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, which is always awesome, and leave a review. And do the same for the Roto Grinders one as well. Head over to iTunes and subscribe to that, and leave a review and help us both get up the rankings into iTunes' algorithm, however they do that, which remains a mystery to everybody. But all that stuff sort of helps. So do that. And a big thank you to you if you're listening to this on the Hardwood Paroxysm Network as well. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe and leave a review and follow us all and both and everybody on Twitter and all the social media platforms. Enjoy the rest of your day, Gabriel. It's been good having you here.
Thank you very much. You have a good one too, Josh.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.